Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome again to Whiskey Congress. We are not reviewing a whiskey today. I'm drinking a Manhattan made with Heaven Hill bourbon. Steve is drinking the Stag Junior that we've talked about in the past. And there's a lot going on, so I actually don't mind skipping a whiskey review today.
Well, pains my heart, but I am willing to take one for the team.
Well, thank you.
It's not like there's no whiskey involved.
That's true, yeah. We're not talking about a new one. So, in fact, you're having one that you really like. So,
yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites.
Up your... In your wheelhouse, as they say. All right. I hate always starting with Trump, but fucking A, you can't avoid it sometimes. So now he's threatening to ship detainees from the border to sanctuary cities as a means of punishing Democrats. Essentially, right? That's the way I heard the story.
You gotta own the libs, Jim. Gotta own the libs. Yeah, so what's interesting about this is that So it started off as... White House aide or whistleblower leaks that the administration was thinking about doing this. And ultimately, it was set aside and said, we can't do it. We're not sure if it's legal. Is it practical? But it's something that they thought about. Trump feels the feedback, you know, feels the pushback, doesn't like it, and says, you know what? Yeah, that's what we're thinking about doing. Right? Not... They thought about it. They put it away. Trump comes out. First, he goes on Twitter and says, yep, no, we're doing. That's what we're talking about doing. And then he goes out and then he actually gives, you know, at a press conference or, you know, a press gaggle. And he talks about what's going on at the border. Now, in terms of the actual issues at the border, while I'll contend that putting a wall up isn't going to do much to stop the flow of drugs... And I think you've seen that kind of get quieted down a little bit because we've had multiple massive drug busts and they were all at ports of entry.
Right.
So even though, yes, do illegal drugs come over the border? Yes. But putting an actual wall up, will it stem the flow?
You know where I stand on that.
Right. A small percentage. And me too. A small percentage because, listen, these guys are bringing the shit in by boat and by plane. So, I mean, you're only going to stop a small...
You don't carry 25,000 pounds of cocaine or whatever they found in New York over the border by foot.
Right. Like, it didn't...
Unless you're really, really strong
right,
and really...
Right. It didn't get from Mexico to New York over the, you know, over the southern border with a dude on a donkey.
Right.
So, you know, but there is an issue with, you know, people that are getting conned by coyotes... Or, you know, a coyote is essentially, if you don't know, it's like a guide.
Human trafficker,
but who someone purports to, who puts himself out there as a guide that'll say, you give me X amount of dollars and I will get you from El Salvador, Venezuela, wherever, to the United States.
Right.
Right. And what ends up happening is these coyotes or these guides or these human traffickers will get, the best of them will get people to a certain point, you know, about 100 miles out and say, you know, all right, best of luck.
You're
get
on
there,
your own. Yep.
Right? You know, Texas, that way. You know, U.S., that way. And a lot of people die. There's no arguing that. There's no, you know, people die along the way or by the time that they get to the U.S. border, you know, I mean, they're in pretty bad shape. And so there is a humanitarian issue that's happening at the border that we need to address. The other big part of it is that, we immigration has ticked up under Trump. It's
sure.
You know, people coming because they hear the rhetoric, we're closing the border, so they're coming in mass while they believe that they still can. Right? And some of that's being driven by, you know, these people, these coyotes or these human traffickers saying, if you're going to go, go now. Right? Because this guy's talking about closing
and,
it.
And it's easy to find clips of he's right, shutting the border.
Right. And once he closes it, that's it. Right? So, you know, the people are coming up in droves more, you know, at a much faster
sure.
pace than they were coming up under Obama and even Bush prior and Clinton prior and everything else. You know, we're just seeing this mad rush where you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people coming every month, you know, trying to basically attacking the border. And so the question is, what do we do with these people? We can only hold them for 20 days. There's only so much space. processing takes forever. There's not enough judges. There's not enough lawyers. There's not enough border patrol. There's not enough social workers. There's not enough physical, actual space. Where are you housing these people? Where are these actual, you know, like, where are these actual court cases happening? And you don't have the right people to actually deal with the issues, whether it's children, whether it's health, wellness. You know, you have all sorts of issues that are happening down there, and it is a disaster.
Yeah.
And we need to address it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the real fix is to fix the issues that they're fleeing from. Because these are people who are literally fleeing for their lives. And frankly, they probably don't know the proper way to... I mean, maybe they do. I'm sure coyotes are probably telling them, I know how to get you in there safely, whatever. But once they're there, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know the risks they're taking, but they know what they're fleeing. And what they're fleeing is horrific. Whether it's drug wars in El Salvador, you know, and gang warfare, or just crushing poverty, which is in no small part caused by that same drug war. So I completely empathize with the people doing this, because I know damn well if I was in El Salvador, I'd be looking to get the fuck out of there too.
Just try to take over and try to be a drug lord.
Or that's option B, I suppose.
Probably your best bet to be option A, honestly. But no. And I think there's two sides of it. You're absolutely right. The Trump administration really made a big mistake when they said we're going to pull money from these countries where these people are coming from, because they need to take care of their own shit. So they need to slow down the flow of people coming, and until they do that, we're going to pull money. We know, evidence-based, that is wrong. That is going to hurt this. That is going to only cause more people to come. Because the way that money typically works, it goes to non-government, non-profit...
Charitable organizations
that go in and they try to do as much work on the ground as they can to help, you know, minimize some of the issues that are causing people to leave. They do simple things like addressing lights on streets, and they do things like, you know, cleaning up certain areas and removing large amounts of blight and building sure. homes, and these are the sort of things where once you bring in light and once you remove, you know, literally obstacles, physical barriers and things like that where people can't hide to do these drug deals and things like that, it literally brings some of the problems to light and allows those that haven't been corrupted in these countries or in these localities to kind of fight back against what's driving people away. Right, but when you
how effectively would be something we'd argue.
Well, listen, I mean, but we have
it's better than nothing. I'll agree.
We have evidence that it has worked in certain places, right? We've seen a slowdown of people coming from these places where the NGOs, these non-governmental organizations, are able to get in and really truly have an impact. So we do know that it can work. So to pull money away from it is problematic, because you're only Now there's nothing,
less, yeah.
right? Like, there's no reason for them to even try to stay. So, but on the other side of it, we need our Congress and we need our representatives to actually do their jobs, right? The Democrats sitting there washing their hands of it and saying, walls are immoral and we're not going to do anything about it because we're mad at Donald Trump because we don't like him because he says words wrong. That's problematic. Right. I mean, but the Republicans going out there and saying, you know, creating this big cloud of a brown menace and that everyone coming across the border is a rapist and a criminal and a MS-13 and they're bringing drugs and disease and, you know, scaring all the white people in all the suburbs so they don't know what to do except for scream and yell. Right. You have people in places that are nowhere near the border like, oh, my God.
Cleveland, for example.
What are we going to do? Right? It's just like, what the fuck? No, you are not going to fucking do anything, Bob.
You live in Cleveland, Ohio.
Right. Like.
If you're worried about people coming swimming across the Canadian border, across Lake Erie, you got that to worry about, I guess. But
right, the interesting thing about this whole thing with immigration, right, is on the one hand, you know, Trump and the conservatives, they all scream and yell that the immigrants want to come here and they want a free handout. And none of them want to work,
right?
But the hardest working people out there. Well, I think let's chill with the extremes, right? Okay. But the reality is, how many? Okay, right, but there's plenty of hardworking people that might take a little bit of offense to that, right? So
they work harder than me. Let me say it that way.
Okay, Jim, that's a low fucking bar.
I object to that, but I did put it on the
Jim. You got a job.
I did put it on
Jim. You got a job.
I
Jim?
Yes, I do. I haven't finished that project yet, so I still have a job, bitch.
no, but what I'm saying is that, you know, you have these people that come across, and a lot of them, in, like, and what do we know will happen? You cut the border off, right? No more illegal immigration. I mean, let's say you were able to just cut it off full tilt right now, immediately. What happens? Construction costs go up, right?
Sure.
Because, like, you're losing...
Vegetables don't get picked.
Right. I mean, you're losing farming. You're losing construction. You're losing hospitality. Like, these people... Like, this idea that these people just come here and they sit and they do nothing, it's crazy. Like, are there some? Yeah, sure. There's a percentage that probably come and do nothing, right?
There's plenty of those homegrown folks
who... Right. There's plenty of people who were born here who do that. But at the same time, when you talk about this, we can't talk about it in these terms of... You can't let the overwhelming loud narrative from a small few kind of set the stage for what's actually happening. Knowing what we know, you know, and now right. The other part of it here is statistically, this is hard to really really know exactly what's happening because they're undocumented. We don't know, right? Like, we have no idea. Like, some of these people come in and they instantly. Essentially, like, they come here, they've been held for 20 days, and they disappear into the fabric, and they get absorbed into their family or to people from the country where they're from or the region where they're from, and we have no idea what happens to them. Listen, it's not all happy endings, right? I mean, there's people who go into sex work. They get sex trafficked. They get killed. They go into drugs, gangs. Yeah. You know,
gang members when they got here, but once they got here, they realized that was their best chance at making money or surviving.
Whatever it might be. I mean, so it's definitely not all happy endings, and we have to, you know, we need to control what's going on. We need to know who's here. We need to know what they're doing. That makes sense. There's nothing wrong with that. Walls aren't immoral. That's an insane thing that Nancy Pelosi says. But, you know, at the same time, there's a humane way to do it. There's a logical way to do it, and we have to start to have that conversation. And I think Democrats stonewalling against this is a bad look. And I think that what Trump is saying is like, listen, I'm going to use this as leverage, right? You're not going to give me a wall. You're not going to give me legislation. You're not going to give me the tools that I need.
Right.
So fine, here you go. I'm going to dump them right in your lap, right? And anything that happens is on you because of your lack of willingness or your inability to come to the table in good faith to try to resolve this issue.
So the concept of we're going to literally bus people that we have detained at the border, drop them off in San Francisco and other sanctuary cities, logistically is so crazy that I honestly want to believe that started off as like a
I guarantee
joke.
You it did.
A joke.
I guarantee you it
okay.
did.
Okay. I know what we should do. We should drive them all to San Francisco.
Yeah. Hey, I bet that's how it started. I bet that's how it started. And then I could see easily Stephen Miller saying, why not? Right, and then someone saying, "Well, we can't because of this, this, and this," and then someone else saying, "Who's going to stop us?"
Yeah,
right. I mean, and at this point, are they wrong
about who's going
to
stop them? No,
right. I mean, it's just we're gonna go to court and order you to not do it. Okay, well, we're gonna do it anyway.
And who's 2 years later, us? When 2 years later, when this court case finally gets to the courts, they will have been living there for 2 years.
Right. I mean, so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I really think that he's trying to force the Democrats to the table, right? I think in Trump's heart of hearts, in that administration, there's no way that they, in reality, want to bring illegal immigrants into the country and dump them in with no way of tracking them and take them to places where they know that local law enforcement isn't going to work with them to bring the people back out, right? This is a ploy to push Democrats to the table to say, let's figure something out in good faith. Is it the best way to do it? Maybe. Only because listen, once something happens, right? If they were to go through this, and I don't think we'll ever get there, but if they did, right? Let's say you load up a bunch of people on a bus or a plane, and then you ship them into San Francisco and you drop them off, and then plane takes off, someone gets murdered or raped, Fox News is going to be all over it, and then it's not going to be Donald Trump and his administration's fault for bringing them there. It's going to be the Democrats' fault for not allowing a conversation and not attempting to put together a policy to prevent this from happening. So they're going to shift the blame over to the Democrats. The blood's going to be on their hands because they didn't do anything, and I don't know if I necessarily disagree with the conservatives on this point because something needs to happen. And no one's doing anything, and it's all partisan, and that's bullshit.
Well, it's definitely all partisan. It's definitely all bullshit. I'm not going to support the the tactic here because A.
I'm not supporting it, but what I'm saying is
Democrats from a political standpoint, right? From using that as a
Democrats need to need to come to the table and they need to resolve this in good faith if they're really truly but they're not really worried about the greater good. This is all about weakening Donald Trump and using it against him in 2020 for whoever the Democratic candidate is, right? I mean that's what this really all boils down to. This isn't about resolving a problem. It's really about them, you know, trying to kick. So they know, like, Donald Trump ran on a wall in fixing immigration, and the longer they can make him look inept and prevent him from following through with his biggest campaign promise that really got him the followership that he got or that he has, they're clearly not going to move off of it. And I don't agree with that because it's hurting. You're hurting a lot of people. Well,
From a political standpoint, I think it hurts the Democrats more now because now Democrats can't say, you got the House, the Senate, and the White House. If you fail, you had it. You couldn't get it right. Now the House looks like an obstructionist Trump-hunting body, which maybe to a degree it is.
Right. What is it?
Or it is. And so now that excuse of, well, you know, you didn't get it done, doesn't fly in as much anymore.
And there's an argument there, right? I mean, he had Congress, he had the Senate, he had the White House. I mean, you did have an opportunity, right? And I mean, no, you still needed Democrats to help you out, but there didn't seem like there was a real effort that was made. I mean, a legitimate effort with legislation that made sense, knowing that you're going to have to compromise on this. Right, like you're not going to get a wall, and then we're going to pick up everyone who's here, a null position for conservatives, right?
Sure.
Wall, kick out everyone's here illegally. Don't let in anyone brown unless they're a fucking genius and they can prove it via, you know, solving for how to get to Mars. Right, like that's their ideal situation. So, you know, we need some sort of a compromise between that and then just let everybody in.
Yeah, and no one has the let everybody in mentality. Now, I agree with you. Nancy Pelosi's walls are immoral was a dumb way to say that and a dumb premise in general.
I'm not saying that they want everybody to come in, but when you actively fight against any sort of resolution to the immigration problem that we have, then it's hard to argue that you're. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to call you something else, right? I mean, you know, Chuck Schumer can sit there all day and say, we want
immigration protection, we want these things, but the president is going to have to. Like, come on, Chuck.
That wasn't the worst impersonation. That was not bad. It wasn't good, but it wasn't bad.
None of your jokes are good, but most of them are bad.
From the guy who never comes to see me do stand-up. Okay.
Fair.
All right.
I didn't come the one time. I was just late.
Yeah, you came after the show was over, but you did come.
I did. And I bought you a drink.
And you did, and I appreciate that. Before we go on to something else, when we're talking about Congress, did you see Candace Owens in front of Congress?
Yeah, I did.
It was pretty, I mean, it's getting a lot of news. I don't know if it's really worthy of a lot of news. She went up there, every Democrat went after her, every Republican kissed her ass. She's repeating the same narrative of, you know, Democrats have been ruining the lives of black people.
I mean, it's frustrating, again, that you know, some of the people that we have representing us and running this country, it's really frustrating. Why is she there? Right? Yeah. I mean, it's just, oh, well, this guy in New Zealand who was a white supremacist listed her in this document. Like, yeah, I mean, he did that for attention, right?
Right.
He did that to do this. Right. That's why he did that.
Way to take the bait.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly. I mean, you took the bait, hook, line, and sinker. Candace Owens. You know, she's nothing. Right. I mean, she's a person who Candace Owens wanted to be a mouthpiece for the left. Right. That's what she really, really wanted. She started a website bashing Donald Trump, talking about his dick, doing all sorts of stuff. Don't believe me? Go look it up. All she did was bash Donald Trump. Right. And then she wanted to create this website to identify trolls. People came after her. Like a lot of gamers and things like that came after her and attacked her. She really felt spurned by the people right. that she was trying to support, so she flipped to the other side. She's a charlatan, right? Like, at the end of the day, all she wants is just to be a mouthpiece for somebody, right? A mercenary, if you will, right? She'll go to the highest bidder, right? I mean, liberals didn't want her. She didn't stand out amongst the you know, progressive liberal crowd. But you're a black face, you're a moderately attractive person, you speak clearly, and if you're willing to parrot whatever narrative that conservatives say, they will always take a black person and promote them and push them up that when they're willing to say shit like that. Sure. Right? And here you go.
I mean, Jesse Lee Peterson has a show.
Larry Elder, whatever. Right, right. I mean, like it's not a hard formula to come up with, right? I mean, if you're willing to say whatever the conservative white people want to hear as a black person, and you say it in a way that is clear and concise, and you speak passionately, then they will throw you out there, they will promote you, and they will give you a platform. And that's what we've seen, right? Like, she's got no credentials worth a damn of really thinking of.
Okay. Right? I don't know anything about her background.
Right? She's literally no credentials other than she's got a YouTube page, right? I mean, and now she's in front of Congress. Like, good, God bless right. America and the American dream, but, like, why are we listening to her? Why do we care? She's a part of Turning Point. Like, she's some spokesperson for Turning Point, which is another thing some, this Charlie sure. Kirk guy makes up. It's just like, oh, it's a way for conservative students to think, whatever. But it's just, there's nothing there's there. There's no legitimate substance to it other than she's just parroting these same narratives that we hear, right? Is it all wrong? No. Is it all right? Definitely not.
Right.
Right? But, I mean, why is she, should she be in front of Congress talking about anything? No. Right? She shouldn't. But they gave her the platform.
Sure.
Right? I mean, and again, I put that on the Democrats who thought that they were doing something worthwhile. Right? Like, you're wasting time with this. Right?
Sure.
White supremacy white supremacists and the white nationalist movement is what it is. It's always been in this country. We've always had it. Right? It's not on the rise. It's been here. It's what this country was fucking built on. Right? You want to stop it, then go solve the problems that you act, that 200 plus years of white supremacy have actually caused, with the shitty healthcare system and the shitty educational system and a shitty environmental system and an even shittier system where, poor kids live in conditions so bad that it completely impacts their mental and emotional health and their ability to develop as human fucking beings. Solve those problems and you can push back against white supremacy. Having this fucking idiot talk in front of Congress isn't going to solve shit, and all it did was make the Democrats look like fucking idiots. Right? Like, listen, she may not be the brightest light on the tree, but she's no fucking dummy. Right? And Ted Lieu fucking embarrassed himself, trying to throw something out there and half-assed it. Right? And he got his ass handed to him by her.
Yeah.
That's on him and that's on them.
I mean, I've credited you with saying this many times now. We look at congressmen and go, wow, he or she is a congress member. They must be smart. Nope.
Negatory, ghostwriter.
Right. All right. So, moving on to presidential politics, sort of. Pete Buttigieg has not even declared yet. So did he really?
Yeah.
I thought he was waiting to do that, and he's sort of all right. So
he's already raised like $7 million.
Right. No, I don't think he's formally like had that declaration party. It's not a shocker, but whatever. The point is, he has been taking an interesting stance. He is promoting himself as an intellectual, which he is, as a veteran, which he is. As a young progressive, which he is, he's also really playing the religion card. And he talks specifically about.
First of all, we need to put it out there. He's gay.
Okay.
He's married to a man.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? Like, let's not hide the lead or bury the lead. Like, okay. He's gay openly and he's married to a man.
Yes.
Mayor of South Bend, Indiana. The same state that our vice president, Mike Pence, was the governor of representative of. And there's a little bit of a beef between them,
right?
Right. Mike Pence, we've talked about it on the show, has a very aggressive stance against homosexuality. He says, he puts his religion out there and says, this is my religion, this is what I believe. And he's, some of the things he did while he was governor of Indiana and, while he was in the House of Representatives, just didn't vibe well with the LGBT community for good reason.
Well, he's actively anti.
Right. He's just very, everything against it. And
and it's because he's a self-loathing gay guy, but we've gone through this before. But anyway, so Buttigieg is playing the, hey, I was created this way. It's not a choice. So my creator made me this way. And Mike Pence took offense to that. Mike Pence thought he was challenging his Christianity. Now, I think, and I've heard Buttigieg say this, that he's basically trying to take away that weapon from conservatives, right? Conservatives have been the party of God. You know, we're religious, we're fundamentalists, we're whatever. They've held that over the heads of voters for a really long time. I'm trying to think of when it started, right. As long as I can remember.
As far back as the Civil War.
So Buttigieg is basically saying, I'm going to talk about this stuff. And,
what he's doing, he's using a tactic, political strategy, where, and it makes a lot of sense, right? Hold your opponent to the standard at which they want to hold everyone else to, right?
Right.
And so what Buttigieg is saying is, listen, I'm a man of God. You're a man of God. God created me, and God created me as I am, right? Religion says you need to accept me as I am, right? But you're not, right? Like, so if we're both men of God, I haven't done anything to you, but you're attacking me. Who's got the issue here in the eyes of God?
Right? Yeah, that's what he's trying to do.
Pence is fighting, right? And Pence is, well, you're attacking my religion. No. I'm just telling, this is your religion. This is your religion. Open the Bible right here. It says in such and such book, chapter, volume, page. Right? So now, he throws it back on Pence. And Pence, like, this whole argument, like, well, he's challenging my religion. He's challenging your religion. Right? Yeah. Like, if you know your religion, then you know he's not wrong, right?
As a Catholic who's...
But this isn't about religion.
Well, it's about politics, you're saying.
It's about... Right.
But... One thing I wanted to say is I have a few gay friends that I talk to about politics, and one of them in particular is really turned off by Buttigieg because Buttigieg is doing this. He basically said to me, you know, he was hanging out with me drinking the other day, and he was like, I don't like the fact that he's playing the religion card. It rubs me the wrong way. And I eventually called him out and said, okay, fine. You're saying all that shit, but if it came down to voting for him or someone else, you'd vote for him. And this goes to me like, John Kerry when he went out goose hunting back when he lost his election, right? Republicans said he's a fake, he's a phony, he's not even, you know, a real hunter. And liberals were like giving him shit because he's killing animals and doing whatever. John Kerry didn't need to win the people who were upset that he killed a goose. He needed to win the people who wanted to draw away from the, you know, I'm a hunter, I'm an outdoorsman crowd. Buttigieg is not going to lose votes amongst liberals because he says, my faith is important to me. He might knock down some of the cards getting held against him doing that. I think it's very smart.
I don't.
Did I lose you?
Yeah, you lost me to Kerry because Kerry, you didn't lose me. Kerry lost me because he didn't need to do it. Kerry was an experienced war vet. So,
right. And he didn't play that well either.
Right. Like, you don't need to do this, right? I mean, just literally.
But the concept hold up a of. Metal. The concept of.
Yeah, I get it.
Did it half-assed.
I get it, again.
And this guy's going...
You know me. I mean, of the three careers that I want to have, one, playing the NFL. Not going to happen, right? Too old, too beat up. Two, professional karaoke singer, right? Three, political strategist.
Four, personal bodyguard of Vladimir Putin. Don't lie.
I don't know. I don't want to be... No. No.
Okay, party friend of Vladimir Putin.
Yes. Yes. No on the personal... That is...
And captain of Jerry Jones's yacht, which was probably your ultimate dream job.
No, I don't want that job either. I just want to go on his yacht, get lost, and just pop up somewhere a month later in Montenegro.
All right, sorry. But anyway, political strategist is the point.
Right, political strategist is the point, and I just think... Kerry played that wrong. He played it all
horribly,
wrong.
Horribly, horribly. And I think Buttigieg is playing it very smart.
And Buttigieg is playing it right. He's playing it right, and he's put in Pence has his followers, but I don't think it's not like the Trump
cult fervor,
right? Like, it's not nearly the same. Like, I mean, the people that are really, really deep in their religion, Pence has those people. You know, Buttigieg isn't going to pull anyone who's a Irish Catholic, you know. Unless they're a, you know,
unless they're a progressive minded one, right?
Progressive minded or, you know, closeted, you know, whatever. But I think he's doing the right thing. And I think he's positioned, he's kind of, and it's interesting that he's attacking Pence the way that he is. And because I think it's kind of like you're seeing it.
See, I don't like the word attack there. I think he's challenging his logic.
Challenging his logic, whatever.
There's a difference, all right?
No.
Okay.
No, not in the way that politics are being played today.
Okay.
I don't think, like, because think about this. You can't, like, there's no such thing as challenging anyone anymore, right? If you challenge, like, if I said anything remotely critical of Israel, I'd be labeled an anti-Semite, right? If I said, hey, Israel, you should probably stop testing various weapons and chemicals on Palestinian prisoners, that's a really dick move by you, then I guarantee you there are a number of people out there who would call me an anti-Semite, right? Oh, sure. You hate the Jews, right? I mean, like, and that's, I don't think that's me attacking Israel.
No.
I think that that's me challenging something that we know that they actually do, right? But someone would turn around and just say, well, you hate the Jews, right? Like, you're questioning the Jews, so you hate them, right? So we're at a point now where there's no common ground, there's no level of just decent discourse,
right?
Like, it's just, it's either you're with me or against me, and if you're against me, I want to cut your head off, right? Like, so you say he's challenging his religion, I guarantee you, but everyone on the Pence crowd, everyone on the Pence side, everyone on the Trump side is going to say Buttigieg is attacking Pence and violating his religious liberties and blah blah blah, yada yada yada. That's the direction that they're going to go.
That's the way they're going to go. I won't argue that for a second. I just think there's a big difference between, you know, Trump calling Adam Schiff a pencil neck versus, which, by the way,
I do find is fucking hilarious.
It is. It'd be hilarious actually, if he wasn't our fucking president.
I'm not a big Adam Schiff fan, and I think Adam Schiff.
I'm not either, but I think you're Adam Mr. Don't Call Names. He's the fucking president. He's calling him a pencil neck. He's using an insult that was popular in 1980 fucking seven.
So fucking hilarious. Because then you look at Adam Schiff and you're like, yeah,
well, yeah, kind of.
But, I mean, and I think Adam Schiff is. Excuse me. Adam Schiff banked on Robert Mueller coming out with a report. God, I butcher that every time.
Three different ways on this one.
I know. Unbelievable. Robert Mueller coming out with a report that was going to say Trump colluded with Vladimir Putin to win the U.S. election, and we're recommending that he be indicted, impeached, and hung, and everything else. Right, and Mueller comes out, and it's not anywhere near close to that, and I'm pretty sure Schiff kind of maybe pooped himself a little bit, right? Well, and now he's really, you know, digging in deep and saying, fuck it, I'm just going to go for broke.
Democrats need to get over the Mueller investigation until they actually have something. Because now there's all this talk about, well, we haven't seen the report yet. Oh, but when the report comes out, something.
Well, I think the fair thing is to say, listen, let's see the report.
Yes. Right? They should say nothing more about that issue until they see the report, have something solid to stand on, and say, okay, just like, you know, Hillary's emails, there was nothing prosecutable here. However, there is massive showing of irresponsible behavior, things that, you know, could possibly be censured, whatever, which may or may not be in there. I'm just saying Democrats need to shut the fuck up about that until they have that in hand, in writing, disclosed, because otherwise it's all speculation. And it's been speculation for 2 years.
Fair. And I think a broader conversation, if you can't do this, clearly all the horses are out of the barn and they're all doing what they want to do. If Nancy Pelosi had any control over the House, and if Chuck Schumer had any control over the Democrats in the Senate, then there should have been a really long, stern, you know, I think the Democrats are actually on a retreat right now. Should be a long conversation of how far do we want to push this Mueller report, And do we just set our sights on 2020? I mean, barring something so damning that it can't be ignored in this report, do we let it go? Acknowledge that there was some behavior that was questionable, you know, at least, at minimum, it was questionable. At worst, it was criminal, but not to the point where we're going it's to...
prosecutable, right?
Right. We're going to prosecute it, and then do we move on? Because we have an election to win, but that's not the route that they're going to go, right? Like, I feel like they should have had that come to Jesus moment where we put a lot into this, we were wrong, or our estimates were wrong, or our guesses, or whatever, and you have to move on. I think that's what Nancy Pelosi wants to happen.
I think so, too.
But she has no control. Like, she doesn't have control, and I'm not necessarily blaming her for not having control. I think because of social media, because of Donald Trump's complete willingness to ignore the normal procedural
right.
kind of behaviors that everyone's...
Representative Minnesota.
Ilhan Omar, man. She...
Well, they got to where they are. They're freshman congresswoman.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of a single time when a freshman congressperson was getting this level of attention on both sides. I mean, they're doing shit that is just, it's new, it's different. They're shaking things up. I mean, both of them.
It makes me nervous because, you know, when you're in the position that they're in, I would love it if they just took a little bit more time to think before they speak. Right. I get the, what you're trying to push for. I get what you want. I don't think that there's this sinister underbelly that, you know, conservatives believe that Omar
wants to bring Sharia law to.
Right. Like, I don't believe that about her. But she also doesn't help herself with some of the way she articulates herself
right.
at times. Same thing with AOC. My biggest beef with her is that I do see her as a talented politician. Right. I think that she's got the skill set, but she's young. She's like a puppy to a degree, right? Like, you know, she's hard to.
Steve just compared a woman to a dog. He hates women.
Fair,
but, not fair. But yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about before, right?
Exactly.
Someone could take that out of context and go, "He called her a puppy."
Right, but I mean, just really rambunctious, and you're trying to sure. rein her in, and you're just like, "Listen, you can do certain things, but there's a way to go about things, and you just once you learn them, then." You know, but you can't, right? Like, you just can't put those sort of clamps on people, especially with having Twitter and Facebook and YouTube True. And everything at your fingertips.
You used to need a microphone and a network,
right? Now you don't, and because right, you can reach the world. Like right now, if I wanted to, I could reach. You know, we have 2,600 followers on Twitter. I could reach 2,600 people right now. Instantly, just by picking up my phone,
right?
And so she has 1,000 times that, right? I mean, she's got millions of followers,
sure.
And so she can reach a massive amount of people very quickly. That's great and terrible at the same time,
sure,
right? And she's learning it, and I think she's getting better. I think Omar is getting there, right? Like she. Like, and like the reality is, like, listen, Ilhan Omar had a tighter rope to walk because not only is she a woman of color, but she's Muslim,
right.
period, right? And that alone is what you can see the conservatives are targeting. You are a Muslim. You've been sent here to infiltrate us from the inside out, and we're going to prove that you're just working for Al-Qaeda or ISIS or whatever, trying to destroy our government, and they're going to try to make ties to Obama and say this is the plan overall, and it's all crazy, right?
Sure, but nothing's too crazy to get said.
But we're at a point now where those crazy small voices are now like they're getting louder and louder, and they're getting more and more of a platform. And if you're going to be in these positions of and have this sort of platform, you just have to be aware of it, and you have to right. be able to navigate. In a way that's just more sophisticated than what these two are doing right now. Downside of, you know, having, you know, being in this position, that the position that they're in at such a young age, right? I mean, because they're not that young. I mean, they're not that much younger than me, but I mean, the difference, the age difference between me and them is the age difference between me and you.
Right.
Right. And it's light years. And I recognize that. Right. I mean, I recognize some of the things that you see and you process, and I process them a different way. And it's directly related to the gap in our age.
Sure.
And I also can remember when I was 28 years old, I couldn't imagine being a fucking congressman at 28 years old. I was like, I'm still too much of a hothead. And for me at 28, like all the advice that I'm giving them now, I would have already, they would have already booted me out of
college. Right. Yeah, sure.
Right. Like, so I mean, like, so on one hand, I'm sympathetic to the fact that they're young in a really interesting
and position. And passionate. Right. Trying
they're
to change
young
things.
And passionate, but they're in such a strong position of power to learn on the job. Like, it's a hell of a fire hose.
And they're
to
fighting
the face.
An establishment that has been ingrained for so long. And that's what I like about them.
And they're fighting they're fighting from a couple different directions. Sure. Right. It's not only just fighting Donald Trump and the conservatives and the GOP. Like, there's
fighting the Democratic establishment.
Right, there's the Democratic establishment and the people who just are, who technically should be voting with them as blue, right, or as Democrats, but are just like,
Well, but I think, back to your point, that Nancy Pelosi is trying to herd cats. She's trying to keep the establishment in line, dedicated to defeating Trump, and then she's got these, you know, people who got to where they are by being outliers. And she's trying to say, no, come on and join the party. You're here now. And they're like, no, that's not how I got here. Right. And it ain't how I'm going to stay here. And in the case of both Omar and AOC, I genuinely believe they're passionate and serious about what they're doing and why. I don't think there's anything phony about them. I mean, you can say they're right, they're wrong, they're too young, whatever. I won't argue any of that. But I don't think they're fake.
No. Okay. I definitely don't think they're fake.
All right. So can we get done with politics for a bit?
Yeah, sort of.
Because there's some really big stories that I don't think are getting as much coverage as they should. You brought to my attention the case of Albert Wilson. And this, go ahead.
Yeah, this is just a sad, sad sort of situation, right? Like, so this kid, Albert Wilson, he's a student at the University of Kansas, and he was at a bar. He met a girl. They had some drinks. They danced. They kissed on the dance floor. He asked her if she wanted to get out of here, go to his place. They went to his place. A lot of that interaction of them on the dance floor, them leaving the nightclub, the bar, is caught on surveillance camera, or security camera, sorry.
Sorry.
Bull in a china shop over there.
Coming from you, that's quite a statement.
Yeah.
Remember the time we had...
When we had Dr. Leon on?
Yes, and you came in here, crashed in, knocked over a glass of whiskey. Christ. Yes, I remember that very well, Steve. We gotta call him again.
We need to call him. I've not reached out to him.
Shit, it's been a year and change now. But yeah, Steve tried to sneakily jump into his chair, kind of missed the landing, hit the table, knocked over a whiskey glass. It was good stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, Albert Wilson and the victim walk away from the bar. They go to his house, which is less than 5 minutes away from the bar that they were at. They're there. They're at the house. They can't be there for more than 5 minutes because they're gone for a total of 15, right? It's a 5 minute walk there. They were there for 5 minutes. There's a 5 minute walk back.
And they are together when they come back.
They're together when they come back, and it's all caught on security camera footage. So they weren't at his place long. He says that they made out and, you know, did some other sexual things, whatever those might be.
Right.
There was no detail. Then he gets some texts that say, hey, where are you? You know, like, let's, you know, whatever, from his friends. So they stop whatever it is that they're doing. He says that she showed some displeasure in the fact that they weren't going to have intercourse. They go back to the bar. The next day, she says, I was raped by this guy. She gets a rape kit done. There's no proof. There's no evidence. Sorry. There's no evidence of sexual intercourse, but they did find his DNA on her chest, and he admitted that he had kissed her on her chest, but there was no seminal fluid or any other DNA sort
right.
of evidence on her from him. And he ended up being found guilty of rape and is going to jail for 12 years.
I mean, just based on what you've said, I don't know how it, I can't say nothing happened. I can't say what happened. And we weren't in the courtroom.
Right.
But there's a ton of stuff that says reasonable doubt with everything you've said there. The fact that they leave the apartment together, the fact that there's, you know, communication interactions between the two of them after the fact. Or did I misunderstand that? Was it text work between the friends? Do we know if there was...
No, there was no communication between the two of them after the fact. Okay. But I mean, there's...
She returns to the bar with him.
Yeah, she returns to the bar with him. The prosecutor pointed out that they weren't holding hands. They were holding hands when they left. They weren't holding hands when they came back. You do have some video evidence of their interactions before, and you have video evidence of their interactions after. My issue with this is just that it's one of those cases where it feels like, man, there could definitely be reasonable doubt here. Now, this kid ends up being found guilty by an all-white jury that's majority female.
So is he black?
He's black. She's white.
Okay.
The jury was majority
and
white.
And it's in Kansas.
Or the jury was all white.
Okay.
And I think it was 9 females.
You know, the jury system is just broken. I mean, I went through that a couple of years ago, witnessing like a jury that was just fucked up. I know you're sick of hearing about it, so I won't go
into
that again.
No, it's not that. I mean, it's just I've experienced it. I work with them.
Okay.
You know,
I listen to the Truth and Justice podcast all the time. And there's a conviction there that is fucking insane in their latest episode, a woman named Sandy Melgar. And it's like, when you hear the physical evidence, there is no fucking way, probably that she could have committed the murder she was accused of, but the fact that there was not found to be reasonable doubt shows the juries don't know what the fuck that means. And you've witnessed it as an attorney. I've witnessed it as a jury foreman. Like, I think
what I'll say is, to be fair, you know, I was a public defender and 99.9% of my clients were guilty. Period.
Sure. Right? But most of them pled guilty.
Right. I mean, I just say they were guilty. They pled guilty. And the whole thing was, you know, instead of putting this, you know, 20-year-old kid away for 20 years, can we get it down to 10, or can we get it down to 5 so he doesn't lose his whole life, and maybe he's got a chance. Like, that was, as a public defender, that was my job. So, you know, but what I will say is that the jury system is a train wreck, right?
It's awful.
I mean, and jury instruction comes down, like, a lot of it comes down to jury instruction.
Yeah.
And a lot of it... Well, first it comes down to jury selection, then it comes down to jury instruction, and then it's kind of up in the air because how do those 12 people interpret the jury instruction, right? Like, you try to form it and craft it the best way that you can. Obviously, the prosecutor is trying to work against you, and so how do you get these 12 people that are completely independent of each other to come to a consensus agreement on how they think and process information, right, the way they're supposed to within the bounds of the law, and then come out with a decision that is going to impact multiple people's lives for the rest of their lives.
Right.
Right. I mean, it is a really daunting task when you think about it, and it happens every day in this country.
In the case I was on was also a rape case, also a black defendant and a white accuser. And there was I can tell you, it was almost flat out said out loud that, well, if this happened to her, she should get some justice. Like, but the if part is what matters.
Right.
And the if part goes, and it sucked. It was a horrible thing to be part of. I mean, you remember how great I handled it. By power drinking every day at 5 o'clock and wanting to do it at noon. But, you know, the jury's mentality was, well, we can't just say we don't have enough evidence because that's not good enough and we're not protecting the victim here. So we're going to say guilty. And having witnessed it firsthand and having heated discussions in a jury room and literally having people admit that that's where their mindset was, and they were still willing to put someone in jail for 30 years in the case of, mine ended up being a hung jury, but they were like, I told you, one girl said, let's just convict him, and if we're wrong, they'll fix it on appeal. We're like, wow.
That is
not how this works. And that was literally the end of our deliberations. I went, okay, I'm out. Like, if you think that's how this works, we're operating a different way. I'm like, you can try to get me removed. You can get you, but I can't. You just said, I have doubts, but I don't want to make a mistake on the wrong side that can't, quote unquote, be corrected. So, anyway, I'm sorry, I'm going on my...
No, it's fine, I get it.
So that's what this sounds like. Like, you know, we don't know what happened in that 5 minutes. Some awful things could happen in 5 minutes. Now, the fact that in this case, they did a rape kit on her within a reasonable period of time, and that evidence didn't show anything.
And here's the deal. I not being in the courtroom.
Right. No, we can't know. But we can say it sounds like a bad conviction, even if not necessarily...
It doesn't sound like a good conviction. And it also, I question... And I'm not saying that the defense attorney was inadequate, but maybe they just didn't...
But it sounds like...
Well, no. They
you
just,
don't know. We weren't there.
Well, no. Listen... There's levels to this shit, right? Like, not all defense attorneys are created equal, right? I mean, like, you have really good ones, and yeah. you have some that are not so good. You have some that are really convincing and some that are not. Some that are really good with the research aspect of it and, you know, finding precedent. But in terms of their delivery in the courtroom, they're really bad, right? And or not good. And then others are really good. Like, you give them all the information and say... Yeah, I mean, that's why you have multiple chairs, right? Like, I mean, you've got, and not all dynamics right. work like this, but you have one that's really good at really kind of putting all the information together, and the other one is really good at kind of taking that information and
questioning
framing
witnesses
it,
and
right, and knowing, being quick on their feet in case they get an answer that they're not prepared for, but being prepared for all answers that could come, and being able to react appropriately. And it sounds like whoever was doing and listen, the odds are against this kid, right? First of all, you're a black kid in Kansas. So
strike one.
You're not off to a great start.
And you're not right? a star for the basketball team, so
you're right. Two. Like, you're not on a football team, you're not on a basketball team, and then, you know, you're a black kid in Kansas at a bar with a white girl, and I've got some serious questions about this girl. I mean, if you read about her testimony, there's a point where she broke out in laughter about, you know, her stumbling on the way home, right? Because there's a video of her walking, and it's like, all right, you're walking fine, right? And she's just like, oh, my God, you have no idea how drunk I was. And then she kind of, like, laughs about it, right? And then she takes them through the walk from the bar to the house, and it goes from, like, oh, my God, it was just so crazy. We were having such a good time and blah, 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 and I tripped, and I'm so dumb. And wow. then we get to his house, and then, like, yeah, he fucking raped me. It's awful, right? And then she, like, get the tears and the waterworks. And I don't. And again, we don't know what right. happens, but, again, it comes down to reasonable doubt. And it just there's something about it that just feels dirty, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this guy's a monster. Maybe in 5 minutes he got her up there, and he was able to figure out a way to get her stop doing
you
what you're doing.
Just talk.
Maybe he was able to get her to his home, figure out a way to get her clothes off, do whatever he did, and get out in a really, really short amount of time, right? And how long?
And then
there's a legitimate question: how long does it take to rape somebody?
Not long.
Not long. None. Right? Like, I mean, we have. No, I mean, it doesn't take very long at all.
Yeah.
And so, it just. But there's just enough there where I feel like if you know, you can really, you should have been able to come to a reasonable doubt. But again, if the guy's a monster and this really happened, then at the same time, right. you don't want him walking the street.
Sure.
But it's got a bad vibe to it, right?
It's what feels right, but then there's also what is the legal standard. And the legal standard, as far as I'm concerned, is just gone. Reasonable doubt is not well-defined. It's not...
What I will say about Reasonable Doubt, probably third favorite album of all time.
Whose album was Reasonable Doubt?
Jay-Z.
Okay.
1996.
I'm sure you're shocked I didn't know that.
I'm not shocked. I would have been floored had you known it. But that was...
Had I had the foresight to look that up. I mean, I don't know. I don't know album names from anyone. I do know who Jay-Z is.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on, man. Julian Assange is being pulled out of the Ecuadorian...
Has been pulled out.
Literally.
Yes.
Carried out but... Limp.
Yeah.
Literally. And I've got mixed feelings.
Full disclosure, I don't give a shit.
Really?
Dude's a scumbag.
You know what?
Dude is a scumbag. Rubbed his shit on the walls in the embassy.
Like, okay. He's a terrible house guest, apparently.
Right. I mean, he was an asshole when he was in the embassy for, you know, the entire time that he was there. It's no surprise that they kicked him out. You know, a lot of people are coming to his defense. And listen, I'll tell you this. Based on what the charge is, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, this could happen to any journalist. No. Like, according to the charge, he helped Chelsea Manning hack into a government computer,
right,
steal information that he could put on his website.
So there's the difference between like the Pentagon Papers, where it's not, something was delivered to a. It's not. You're right.
It's not that. Right. And people want it to be that so fucking bad. They want it to be, oh, he just was handed information and he published it. And now he's being persecuted. Bullshit. He's a fucking hacker.
Okay.
He hacked him.
Okay.
Right? But allegedly, supposedly, we don't know.
Right.
All right? Like, just before people get all in my shit. But if you think that fucking scumbag, right? Yeah, I got a bias. I don't like him. I think everything about him reeks of narcissism. So, like, he's so full of shit.
Whoa, he's not full of shit.
Yes, he is.
How's he full of shit?
Because he's sitting there saying, oh, I'm a victim. You're not a fucking victim.
Okay.
You went out, you intentionally hacked the U.S. government.
Right.
And now you're mad that the U.S. government is mad at you. What the fuck do you think was going to happen?
Okay, but the stuff he published, as far as I know, is completely legitimate. Yeah. Well, that's what matters to me.
Oh, okay.
That's what matters to me.
Well, yeah, you're right. And it's all there, and it is, and you deal with it.
And Steve, the biggest thing to me...
None of that shit was a surprise.
You know what, though?
We went to war and we were assholes when we went to war on a foreign country. No shit.
And name another media outlet that showed that the way it did. Because CNN sure ain't fucking doing it. I mean, no major network is willing to show the real ugliness of what happens when you go to war like that. Right?
WikiLeaks sent out a bunch of papers that...
And videos and... All right, so one of my biggest things is
what's your thing?
I don't
spit it out.
I don't like unnecessary wars, and I don't like how we sugarcoat them in this country. We're sitting here, comfy, fine, having my Manhattan, great. Meanwhile, our government is putting people in a position to have to kill or end up killing civilians, and we treat it like cost of doing business, and that's bullshit. And we should know as a country what that really means. Because
you don't know.
No, I don't, because I've never been there. But I've talked to people who have.
But that's what
Julian Assange is trying to do. Right? It's not. You're damn right. It's not the same. At least it's not nothing. It's not.
It's not like Fox, dude, I don't CNN care kissing. How many fucking videos you watch. I don't care how many documents you read. It's not the same as fucking war. And if you've never been in it, there's no equivocation.
Okay.
And there's no fucking reason that fucking asshole needs to be in our fucking government documents displaying them for the world to fucking see. It is bullshit. It's a complete violation. He's a fucking scumbag and he deserves to fucking burn. I don't give a shit. Fuck him and fuck that.
You know what? I really wish you'd just come out of your shell and tell me how you really feel about this.
It's bullshit, Jim. It is fucking bullshit. You don't want to fucking know. You can't handle a rape case that happened here. And you think you can fucking handle yourself.
I did handle it.
You did not.
Bullshit, I didn't.
Fuck
bullshit,
out of here.
I didn't.
You still can't fucking handle it. You can't talk about it right now without going into a goddamn spasm. So you think that you can fucking handle actual video and actual experience of fucking war? Of people getting fucking murdered and maimed and fucking blown up by drones? Caused by our president and our government? Like, you really want in that shit?
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. You're totally flipping the narrative.
I'm not flipping the narrative. You're flipping the narrative. That's what's fucking going on.
Exactly. And people here don't fucking know it. And just because I don't...
We do fucking know it.
Do we? The average Joe on the street, if we walked into one of our local bars and interviewed people about it, they would know it? No, they won't. And maybe Julian Assange is a scumbag, and maybe he's wiping shit on walls, but he was trying to show stuff that he believed people weren't seeing, and I believe they aren't seeing, and I think that's a good thing.
Okay, fine. All right. We agree you're just great.
Okay, fair enough. All right. So in the interest of being fair, we've dragged enough of Trump's cronies through the mud for getting indicted in the Mueller probe. We got another one. This one's an Obama guy.
Gregory Craig. He was the White House counsel for under Obama. Getting indicted, lying to the investigators about his involvement with the Ukraine and money that he was getting from the Ukrainian government. Apparently, the Ukraine...
Did he have ostrich genes?
That's what I want to
know. Not guilty.
But if he had a snake vest...
If he had a snake vest.
But if he had a snake vest, I don't know.
Sorry, just anytime you get a chance to bring up ostrich genes, Or snake vests.
Manafort, what the fuck are you doing? Jesus Christ. I just can't get over that. He's like, I don't know how I got caught. I don't either, Paul.
I just wish he would have shown up in court wearing that. That would have been... What? These are my casual ostrich.
Playing a little R. Kelly. Not guilty. That's what it was.
The dragnet swept.
Right. And so the question is, what does that mean? Right. Is there a connection between the Obama administration and Paul Manafort and Russia and everything else? No, there's not.
But another scumbag goes down. This means way less to me than the previous subject meant to you.
And you know what's interesting here is my issue with Trump isn't I think his love or appreciation of guys like Putin and... You know, I know he's playing a game with Kim Jong-un and all this other shit, but, you know, he shows all this affection towards these...
Strong, powerful
dictators. Right. I mean, it's been well documented. But all along, I've said that his biggest issue was who he tied himself to during his campaign, right? He tied himself to a number of people who were has-beens, who were washed up, or who...
Stone is popping in my head right now.
Right, Roger Stone, even William Barr, who felt like he didn't quite make that impact as a turn, like he never had that big moment in the sun, in the spotlight. And so he's tied himself to all these people who, because they never really had the true political influence and power that they ultimately wanted, were very susceptible to things like working for foreign governments and lying about it and you know, being lobbyists.
Evading taxes, not reporting it.
Like, he surrounded himself with these sort of people because that's fine if you're doing real estate deals. It's not fine if you're trying to run a country. And right. I don't think that he was...
It probably wasn't fine when doing real estate deals.
No, well, I mean, I think that... you'd be surprised what you can get away with when you can put millions of dollars into a deal. But I think that one of his biggest issues was the people he surrounded himself with. And he surrounded himself with enough people that raised enough eyebrows where that's where a lot of this Russian bullshit is coming from. Right, I don't believe that at any point in time, his team is sitting there saying, "Well, let's do a deal with the Russians to help secure us winning the White House." That was never That was never the formal agreement, or that was never anyone's thought process. It was, "Let's win at all costs. Let's get some people who are different than the people that are already here. I've worked with these guys. I've known these guys. We're all rich. We run in the same circles. These guys think like me. They've got some ties to Washington, and for whatever reason, they're not in Washington now. But fuck it. Let's just get them on board. And we got some younger guys who are itching to get in the game no matter what. And by no matter what, some of those guys are willing to do shit that they weren't supposed to be doing and talk to people that they weren't supposed to be talking to because they were too naive or they just didn't have the skill set to be able to navigate it in a way that wasn't going to get them in trouble with the fucking FBI, right? Okay. I mean, and that's who and what he surrounded himself with. And
apparently that leaked over to the other side of the aisle in this case, right?
I don't know. I don't know enough about Gregory Craig to say what the fuck this even means. Right, I mean, we know he was Obama's White House counsel, but we know that he had some shady dealings with the Ukrainian government. So, what was his role in all of this? You know, I mean, was he trying to undercut Hillary? Was it all about money?
And people on the right, I don't care what happens to him. If he's guilty, fucking lock him up. I don't give a shit. Yeah, what's that?
I said, yeah, true enough.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend this guy just because he voted for the same people I did. If he's a douchebag, fuck him.
Yeah.
Which is ironic considering our recent conversation. All right. We're just over an hour, and you've got a weekend trip coming up.
Yeah, man.
So this will be published right after the game's over, but talk about it.
Yeah, man. I'm going to take a ride up to Buffalo. It's a couple hours, 3 hours away from here. Check it out. The alma mater, the UMass Minutemen, beat University of Denver, the Pioneers.
I think that's right.
They beat the Pioneers last night in the NCAA Frozen Four. They'll be playing the...
University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs. Yes,
the University of Minnesota Duluth Bulldogs.
Imagine being magically swept away to Duluth, Minnesota.
Right.
Which I've never been there. Actually, there's some really pretty stuff in Minnesota. I've been to Minnesota, just never been to Duluth.
I have not been to Minnesota, but I am going to Buffalo, your home.
My hometown.
Your stomping grounds.
Yes.
And I'm going to go root on my alma mater. I haven't decided if I'm going to buy tickets to the game. They're not as expensive as I thought they were going to be.
Okay.
Like I looked earlier in the week, and tickets for the championship games, the cheapest ticket was like $150, which I was like,
with you for the whole family, that's almost $500. Right. And
so I passed
for
on
two
that.
People who really wouldn't be that passionate right. about it.
So, but ticket prices are going down, and so I don't know. I may actually go to the game, but either way, I'm going to be the hotel I'm staying at is right. Literally connected to
right.
the arena.
The Harbor Center Marriott in downtown Buffalo, which is like
right.
brand new.
So I am excited about that. It should be a fun trip. And, you know, go UMass.
Go,
you know?
I'll cheer for your boys.
I appreciate you coming and watching the game with me last night and helping explain to me some of the rules. I'm not a complete no. hockey novice.
No. But you're not a
right,
hockey
fan. I'm not an avid hockey fan because I've never had a dog in a hockey fight before,
right.
so to speak. So I appreciate that company last night. And
it was a lot of fun.
You know,
it was a lot of fun. It was all right, so the best part about it, I'm gonna throw you under the bus a little bit because Steve committed the classic hockey error. Don't go to the bathroom in overtime.
Well, what I'll tell you is listen, if I stay there, then maybe they don't score that goal. Right
now you're thinking like a hockey fan
because things.
Now you're things we have kicked people out of rooms. Like they scored when you were in the bathroom. Go take a piss.
Listen,
we have done that.
We were up 3-1, and then Denver comes back and they tie the game. The game goes into overtime, and
Denver had you guys on your heels for
right,
a long.
We did. I mean, two of our players got kicked out of the game. The one kid is kicked out of the championship game.
Ooh,
by the way,
okay.
The kid who threw the elbow. So I mean, it was rough, and my bladder was telling me, like, listen, as full as, you know, as big as I am, I can't hold any more.
So anyway, Steve was in the bathroom when the winning goal got scored, but he came out clapping his hands and got to see the replay
just in the nick of time. And I washed my hands, by the way.
Well
so,
done.
You know, but yeah, no. So that's
it was a lot of fun. We got to hang out, watch hockey.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was an enjoyable experience. You know, it's fun to do something different, and this will be definitely a different experience for me. I've been to hockey games before.
Sure.
When I was in college, you know, the football team would support the hockey team. I've been to professional hockey games before, locally here.
You said
Cleveland.
Honky games, by the way.
Hockey.
Freudian slip.
Fair. I've been to hockey games here before, here in Cleveland.
Lake Erie Monsters, sure.
Yeah, the Cleveland Monsters now.
Oh,
They changed their name. They're the Cleveland Monsters, but this will be fun. I'm excited. So hopefully the boys can pull it out.
I'm cheering for UMass. Go Minutemen, and I hope you enjoy your time in Buffalo. Ready to wrap this up?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Jim at Whiskey Congress, Steve at Whiskey Congress, and thanks, we're out.
Good night.